On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Will Giannis make it through the season in Milwaukee, or is the time to trade him now? Plus, riddled with injuries, now including Ja Morant, who is even available to start for the Memphis Grizzlies on opening night? All this coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I'm back in my set. The season is here. Dan, you're my man. You're our man. How we doing?
I'm good, man. It's a homecoming. I'm excited for you. You're getting back. You know, you've been like the barnstorming team. You know, it's like the Harlem Globetrotters traveling around, bringing your brand of analysis and mirth and merriment all over the country, it feels like. But now back at home, how does it feel being back in the home studio?
Feels good, man. It feels great. You know, I'm in the best shape of my life. I put on 15 pounds of muscle, or at least 15 pounds of beard. Same thing. You know, I'm ready for the season here, and I'm ready to tell you guys listening, check out the Yahoo Sports Network, our brand new streaming TV channel. Check out our yahoosports.tv on your tablet, on your phone, on your browser, whatever, and check us out. We're like on TV now, on the FAST channel.
It's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. Like when people ask, you know, are you an on-camera talent? I can now like legitimately say like, yeah, oh no, yeah, I'm on screens. And they're like, what? Why did you say it weird like that? Like, what did you mean by that? I'm like, it's TV. It's dot TV. I'm on dot TV.
Yeah, and so then we hit you everywhere. We're at 360 right. On this show. That is the big number. No, it's not the big number, 360. But
you bring it up, Tom, and I'm curious, what is this week's big number?
This week's big number, Dan, is 26th. That is what Giannis Antetokounmpo's supporting cast ranks in the NBA. 26th in the NBA. I did that study using estimated plus minus data from dunksandthrees.com. So, Dan, what I did was I looked at every roster in the NBA, and then I ranked by best player according to estimated plus minus, the player value metric there. And I looked at 2 through 10. Which teams had the best supporting cast, ranked all 30 teams beyond the best player? And Giannis Antetokounmpo's supporting cast, 2 through 10 on the Milwaukee Bucks roster, is bottom 5. And the only other teams that have a worse starting supporting cast in the NBA right now is Utah, Charlotte, Brooklyn, and Washington.
That felt like I was getting punched in the gut with each one of those. When I hear Utah, I'm like, ah, Charlotte, ooh, you know, like, but none of those feel particularly good. Being in that company, not exactly where you want to be if you've got big, you know, your sights set on contending and, you know, late postseason runs, which we know Giannis does.
Yeah, yeah. And it really is a testament that they're projected by Vegas to have like 42 and a half wins, or, you know, that's the over-under. It's a testament to how good Giannis is.
Yes.
They could have basically, their supporting cast is that of a tanking team. Like, that is where we're at right now with, you know, Miles Turner. Look, they did as good as you can imagine in a really difficult situation. Houdini'd themselves out of, you know, Damian Lillard and his Achilles tear in the postseason. They were already thin as it was. And so they decided to stretch and waive Damian Lillard's contract over the next 5 years and bring in, you know, over 4-year contract, $100+ million for Miles Turner, who can help fill the gap. The void left by Brook Lopez, who is kind of this perfect spacing rim protector at the 5 next to Giannis. But even still, like, as useful as Miles Turner was for the Indiana Pacers during their miraculous Cinderella run to the NBA Finals, I kind of feel like if that's your second best player on your team and you're trying to win a championship, I'm not buying it. What I am buying, Dan, is this Shams Charania report for ESPN saying that more than ever, Giannis Antetokounmpo is kind of exploring his options around the league. And while he hasn't made a trade demand, he's essentially expressed a desire to go to New York if something does matriculate or if he does want to leave. I know there's a lot of contingencies there.
Yes.
But the Knicks are being thrown about as a potential destination for Giannis. And I totally get it. Like, I totally get if Giannis is looking at this roster and seeing that the starting lineup is going to be Kevin Porter Jr., AJ Green, Derry Bird, as we like to call him, Kyle Kuzma, and Miles Turner, or if you want Bobby Portis in there, okay, fine. If you want Gary Harris in there, fine. But these are all guys who are, I don't know, with the exception of Miles Turner, those are bench guys. Those are guys, nice rotation guys to have in the rotation, but not starter level caliber, championship contending caliber players. And so part of me thinks that Giannis didn't make the trade demand because he kind of needed to have the pretext for a trade demand. Is like this starting rotation, the lineup. I kind of feel like Giannis cares about how he's perceived out there, cares about Milwaukee, the city, the region.
Sure.
And I feel like if he makes a trade demand out this summer without seeing this group together, he might not have as much weight supporting him in that decision. So looking at this supporting cast, being of a bottom five caliber in the league among the basement dwellers, I feel like we're just gearing up for a midseason trade demand from Giannis Antetokounmpo. And he's won a championship in Milwaukee. Dan, I'm wondering what you think of this. Do we think that Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to last for the full season in Milwaukee?
I think yes, for a couple of reasons. One is just the sheer size of Giannis's contract and the kind of package it would require in return, like to bring him back. Like what you'd have to send out an outgoing salary, the number of players that are likely going to have to be part of that, like adding up to his, I think, $54 million contract. And you'd imagine that if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you're saying, we are really strapped for cap assets. We're really strapped for young talent. As you mentioned, there's really not a projectable young piece where you're like, that's someone to be excited about moving forward, which is like, that's the natural attrition of, you've turned all of this young talent and draft picks and whatever you sort of didn't have nailed down, first into Jrue Holiday, then into Damian Lillard. And that's kind of like the killer in all this is, you know, even something like things didn't work out in Phoenix in the Kevin Durant deal and you sent everything out to get Kevin Durant. The Suns were still able to recoup something by trading Kevin Durant, and that returns Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks and the number 10 pick used on Kemal Malawach. And like there's stuff you can get back to start fresh or start something moving forward to kind of kickstart whatever comes next. Having Lillard rupture his Achilles at that point in the postseason and at his age and what was left on his deal, the Suns or the Bucks rather were not able to reroute him and turn him into stuff you could use, raw materials for a rebuild. So then you're in that position of, we've got to make a bold move and do the best we can to do something for today. And that results in Miles Turner, but it results in Miles Turner with no like additional draft capital or young pieces. So if you're the Bucks and you're saying, we're going to be bad, we've got to, and our draft assets are all over the place. We need stuff coming back and we need young players and we need multiple players to fill in that salary. If that's a lot to get done in February, that's when rosters are smaller, like in the offseason, you can have, I think up to 21 players on a roster without having to waive people, only 15 during the regular season. In the season, your teams are much tighter up against whatever their apron or you know their luxury tax burdens are going to be. They might have less flexibility to be able to bring in more money than they sent out based on how they've built their roster heading into the season. The restrictions are much tighter, and the size of the needle you have to thread is even more narrow in season. I think combine that with, as you mentioned, Giannis maybe gives himself the out of being able to say, listen, we gave it the old college try. I gave this the roster as John Horst put it together this summer. I gave it a full runway, a full season. We saw that it didn't really get us any closer to the end goal, which is a championship. Any goal south of that is not good enough for me. I do not see a pathway. I've given it the time. Now is the opportunity for me to say I want something more, which that to me feels more likely than in January or in December. I say, hit the eject button. Let's get me out of here as soon as possible. That said, I wouldn't have expected that we'd head into media day and Giannis would say, like, all of the reporting this summer about me, maybe thinking about somewhere else is true. And then you know, on the eve of their first preseason game or whatever, like a new report saying that I've had my eye on New York. I didn't expect that either. So yeah. I don't know. Do you see an in-season move as particularly likely?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
I
do.
Think all
okay.
the reasons you laid out, Dan, I was like, is he going to come around to the idea that he's going to get moved? Like, I understand the roster crunch that happens, but also guys who were signed in free agency or re-signed and they have their trade restrictions lifted December 15th or January 15th.
Right.
We talked about this with Fred VanVleet a couple of weeks ago, is that the Houston Rockets are kind of, they got their hands tied until next couple months of the season because of those trade restrictions around players that signed in the offseason. I think John Horst, and if, whether it's Leon Rose or Mike Dunleavy Jr. or if it's Raphael Stone, they're going to have some coffee dates in the next few months to kind of sketch this out like Rob Pelinka and Nico Harrison did on the low last year. I think we're going to see a trade. I think Giannis has done more than enough to prove to the city of Milwaukee that he is going to run through a wall for them. And at this point, I think I just put the story out for Yahoo Sports. It's like the superstar trade paradox is the rebuilding team that sells the superstar oftentimes does better than the team that acquired the superstar, which is kind of backwards. You would think that the team that gets Giannis, gets Paul George, or Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden, you think those teams add those MVP candidates to their squad as the missing piece on a super team, and they're just going to be cooking with gas. But I looked at the 11 trades, superstar kitchen sink trades where there's multiple first round picks and players going into a deal. 11 trades from 2019 to 2023. And Dan, of those 11 trades, those superstar trades, I'm talking AD, Russ, James Harden, Paul George, all of those, only two of them resulted in a championship. Only two out of the 11 resulted in a finals appearance. And on the other side, the rebuilding team, Oklahoma City Thunder, oh yeah, we just won a championship with a lot of the pieces coming from those Russell Westbrook and Paul George trades back in 2019. You look at the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown championship last year in 2024. That was a result of that infamous Brooklyn Nets trade with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. You look at 2022 or 2023 with the Denver Nuggets. Jamal Murray, as you know, was originally that pick to land Jamal Murray was the Knicks pick that they traded for Carmelo Anthony in 2017. The pick ended up being 2017. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, Dan, is if I'm John Horst, I've really tried to make this work, but I wouldn't be afraid of moving Giannis because oftentimes, you know, it might be a longer runway, but the best chance at winning a championship in Milwaukee again might be saying goodbye to Giannis and getting a full mother load of picks and young talent. Because as we're seeing with Houston too, dude, Houston did the same thing with James Harden, Russell Westbrook. When that didn't work out, they pulled the plug. And now you see they have the second brightest future in the NBA, according to ESPN's trade future team rankings. And the 30th team was the Phoenix Suns, which tried to make the super team thing work, traded everything for Kevin Durant. And now they have the bleakest future in the NBA. So I just wouldn't be afraid to do that. Obviously, the emotional ties and everything, I just kind of feel like it is time. And I think Giannis knows it's time, which is why he's like slow leaking this and slow playing this for what I think will happen is a deal gets done at the trade deadline. So that's my sense. I have no insider information on this, but given the fact that we've seen so many of these super team trades, superstar trades kind of not pan out, I don't know. Maybe you do it now sooner than later before other teams start to realize maybe it isn't as cracked up to be to trade for a 30-year-old star, even though he's a a perennial MVP candidate. I don't know. For the asking price, it hasn't panned out as well as we thought.
Absolutely. But I wonder if like, so, and that's your, it's included in a wonderful piece that you wrote at Yahoo Sports. People should go and check that out. The Knicks know that too. And Giannis knows that too, right? Like the Knicks have, it was a different front office, but they were, the Knicks were on the end of the Carmelo Anthony trade where there was that choice of, do we wait 6 months? Does Carmelo wait 6 months to sign in free agency, or do we make this trade now and gut the roster, sending out, I mean, it's, the names are just hilarious now, but in that moment, sending out Danilo Gallinari and Wilson Chandler and Timofey Mozgov, you know,
don't forget about Raymond Felton.
We never forget about Raymond Felton. That was tantamount to a gutting of the roster, right? Like there wasn't a playoff caliber team there for Carmelo to join at that moment. And so if you are the Knicks and you're saying this has been a bit by bit, brick by brick rebuild to get to a point where you are a conference finalist and now one of the favorites to come out of the Eastern Conference with renewed depth, with the new head coach, Mike Brown, all that, the idea of multiple pieces out in the middle of the season to import Giannis and then try to retrofit around him in midstream might make you more reticent to make that move, even if it is obviously a no-brainer talent. And then if you're Giannis and you're saying the whole point of this is to get to a place where you're competing for championships, and New York would be a place that you see as a good pathway to do that, are you as likely to view, do you view the Knicks as quite as strong an opportunity if half the roster went out to come get you? And maybe the answer is yes, because you are Giannis Antetokounmpo and you're like, anywhere I am is good enough to do that. But I wonder if the opportunity is do it in January or February to get it done now, or wait till the end to, you know, the summertime where you are entering what could be the final season of your contract before a player option in 27-28. The sort of maximum amount of leverage you have to be able to say, I choose where I want to go and you are going to work with me, Milwaukee, because I've meant all this to your franchise to get to where I would like to go. Maybe you get a little bit more control on what the return price is at that point. So your points are valid. And I wonder if knowing that both Giannis and the Knicks front office would say that is all the more reason to wait until later, because we've seen the downside risk of sending out all that stuff to get the one guy, and we want to make sure that it's really worth the squeeze for us.
There's so much to get into.
Yeah.
So you've got four little numbers.
I do.
Let's talk about, because we got to go a deep dive on this topic. It's so fascinating. I mean, Giannis could be the best player in the NBA right now and has every right to look at his situation and say, this isn't enough. I've won a championship and I want to move on. And plenty of superstars have done that, played that card. So let's get into the four little numbers coming up right after the break. All right, this week's big number is 26th. That is Giannis Antetokounmpo's supporting cast rank in the NBA. So the Milwaukee Bucks are basically the caliber of a tanking team around Giannis, which is not great. So Dan, what's your first little number here to talk about this Giannis situation?
First little number, kind of another lens through which to view that, is -5.6. That's how many total estimated wins above replacement the Bucks lost this offseason, according to an analysis published last week by Neil Payne over at ESPN. Payne took a look at which NBA teams gained or lost the most value over the summer using his estimated version of WAR based on the Raptor metric that used to be published at 538. Basically, Payne added up the projected WAR of all the players a team added, like draft picks and signings and trades, added up the projected WAR of all the ones that went away, releasing, trading away, and then saw which one of those was bigger, what you added or what you lost. The tally in Milwaukee was that going from Damian Lillard, Brooke Lopez, etc., to Miles Turner, Gary Harris, Cole Anthony, and the other players they've added dropped the Bucks' projection by nearly 6 wins, -5.6. That's the third biggest drop in the league behind only the Celtics, who lost Jason Tatum to an Achilles rupture and then traded half their rotation, and the Phoenix Suns, who, as we mentioned, traded away Kevin Durant. So nearly 6-win drop off there. And, you know, there's caveats. You know, these are projections and players cannot perform their projections. And the Achilles tear meant Dame was going to drop to zero no matter what. So, like, you would have been a big drop off kind of no matter what. That's why part of the reason why the Celtics were so far down is losing Tatum. And it's also, like, it's not necessarily a one-to-one thing of, like, you won 48 games last year -5.6. So you're talking about like a 42.5 win team. Although it is notable that Las Vegas does see the Bucks. I think they're over under the number is 42.5, which is interesting in this context. But if you're Giannis and your eye test on what the roster looks like matches up with that back of the envelope math that, like, we just saw a handful of wins walk out the door and we're probably more likely to be around a 500 team than we are fighting for home court or a title. Maybe it's understandable that this is the time where your eye starts wandering, like, for real. Like, oh, the saber rattling of years past kind of really hits a new level in the story that we saw this week.
Yeah, and it's tough because it's not just the win drop that you mentioned. It's also that you have a bunch of dead salary on the books for the next few years, right? So not only are you downgrading, but you're also kind of eating into your roster flexibility a little bit by stretching and waiving Damian Lillard. So it kind of hurts twice, you know?
Yeah, and to be clear on that, the $113 million that was left on Dame's contract, I think it was 112.6, but something like that, that now gets stretched over the next five seasons. So for the next 5 years, from now through 2030, the Bucks are going to have a $22.5 million dead roster charge on their books. They can't get rid of that. They can't, like, find another way to take it, trade that as an expiring or something like that. That's just going to be there. So every other team has the full salary cap. The Bucks have the full salary cap minus that $22.5. That's like a pretty decent starter in today's NBA, or if not better than that, that amount of money per year, that's going to be a pretty significant impediment for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of like looking at Miles Turner as twice as expensive, you know?
Right.
You know, but I mean, I guess the other side is if you don't waive Dame, you just have his full contract on the books and you don't have Miles. It's just, man, they keep digging themselves or pushing themselves into this corner. And what you're basically describing is that if Giannis misses any time, this could get ugly real fast. Just based on the talent in, talent out, it could get really ugly really fast. And to Giannis's credit, he didn't make a trade demand last year when they started out 2-8. He could have. And maybe this is Giannis. What we saw last year is maybe we'll see it again this year, is that no matter how deep this hole gets, if he misses time or if the team is just really not gelling out of the gate, he might just be like, yeah, I'm going down. Like, I'm going down with the ship. I'm not going to bail. But you said it there with the talent deficit that we saw in the offseason, even with Miles Turner being added, they're going to miss Brooke Lopez. And I just think this is going to be a really tough season. Like, if all of those players, those rotation players hit, still, I have a hard time seeing a 50-win team here. And that's probably what it's going to take to get into that championship contention. So, yeah, just another way to look at the dire situation there with Milwaukee, even with Horst signing Miles Turner to a four-year deal there. What's your next little number?
Next little number is 2031. That's the year when the Bucks next control their own first-round pick, thanks to the past trades they've made to try to build around Giannis. You know, you mentioned the hole that they've dug for themselves. Giannis was holding the shovel for at least some of that, right? Like, the idea of when they got to 2020 and it was like, there needs to be an all-in move here. We've run into a roadblock. That's Jrue Holiday. So the next, right.
And that, by the way, Dan, that's one of the two teams that did one of these kitchen sink all-in deals with multiple picks with Jrue Holiday from New Orleans that worked out, that they did end up in a title in Milwaukee. So Giannis might be like, hey man, you know, I appreciate that. We got a title out of it and it did work. So for those who want to look at like the history of the superstar trades, that is one of the examples. But of course, a lot of the things that they did to get Jrue Holiday, they're still paying the bills,
including these next two seasons. So 2026, the Bucks, there are two teams now that have swap rights on the Bucks pick. I guess it's the Pelicans from the Jrue Holiday deal. And then because of the Derek Queen draft night trade at the 2026 draft, the Hawks can get that pick. But either way, the Bucks don't control it. They will get a first round pick in 2026, but it will not be their own. So no matter how bad they are, it's, you know, they don't control it. 2027, Pelicans own it outright from the Jrue trade. So that's why, you know, when you often see these sort of superstar trades, the seller will often try to push the date of the picks coming back as far into the future as possible. The idea being like, yeah, we expect you're going to be really good over the next couple of seasons because you're getting this star talent. So we want the far future pick. So the Drew Holiday trade was 2020. Now 2026 and 27, the Pelicans are getting return on that investment too. And then when they run into the wall in 2023, it's the Damian Lillard trade with Drew Holiday going out. And so 2028 swap rights in Portland, 2029, the Blazers get the pick outright, 2030 swap rights again for Portland. So because of the Dame trade. So through the remainder of this decade, they do not control their own draft, their own first round draft pick. And I think the interesting, I mean, we expect that that would mean that no matter what the trade would look like, there would need to be a lot of draft capital coming back. The thing that I'm curious about is if you're Milwaukee, again, not a gigantic market, not someplace that's going to be a free agency destination. You also have this $22.5 million cap charge that is, you know, is you're going to make it more difficult for you to add talent. Do you need present tense good players now as much as you need that future talent? Like, are you looking at it and saying, we still have to try to be decent because there's no value in us being terrible? We don't control our picks.
It's fascinating, and it's one of the reasons why I think maybe the Knicks are more likely to get him, because you got Karl-Anthony Towns on your team, and it's like, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, do you pull like a Luka Doncic AD thing where it's like, we get back AD and we still go for it because we don't have our pick? If we do blow it up, unless we do a trade with New Orleans and Atlanta or some form of that, they're not going to be able to maximize their own tanking.
Yeah.
So, like, for them, maybe it's not as advantageous to go for a bunch of first-round picks unless they get that Atlanta pick back. And that they can, and teams have done that before, which is they go and they make a trade so that they, if they do end up bottoming out, they will reap the benefits of that. But you point this out, you know, they don't have... They don't have much flexibility here because of those all-in trades for Dame and Drew. And I'll just point out, when I did this study of the 11 superstars that were acquired in these big trades, six out of the 11 were on another team within 3 years.
Yeah.
It's a rental. Oftentimes, if you're the Knicks, you're like, oh, yeah, this is the missing piece. But so many teams had thought that, and then it blows up, and then they got to... you know, resell or retrade that player for, you know, 60 cents on the dollar. And so to your point about like these teams that are savvy enough to be like, we want to kick the can down the road and get these picks down the road. Not only is Giannis going to be older, but potentially he's going to be gone. And so it's another reason why I would be nervous if I'm acquiring Giannis. Obviously he's a great player and all that, but does he get a change of heart when he goes to New York or if he goes to Golden State? And let's say things don't work out as well in these new situations. That's why I think a lot of these superstar trades don't end up nearly as well as they think, is they don't foresee all of the different puzzle pieces not fitting together. You just kind of hope it does, and you dream and you fantasize. Oh, it'd be great if we got Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and James Harden together. Scary hours, right? And then within like 3 weeks, it all just... It evaporates, right, in a cloud of dust. So
it's the interesting thing with that, and I want to move on to the next little number in a second, but because things falling apart in Brooklyn led to Durant going to Phoenix, and so Houston, who had traded James Harden to Brooklyn when they were like, you know, we're figuring out what we need to do, they were like betting the downside risk on Phoenix. You know, after some of those deals, and it's like they wind up, they didn't control their own picks, but they controlled Phoenix's picks.
Great.
And so then that becomes what you use to get, like, it's all this arbitrage. And like, you know, I'm betting on you failing. And then I don't control my own future, but if I control your future and a slice of it and you go belly up, then I wind up coming out the winner. So then that, if I'm John Horst, I'm wondering whose picks do I want? If I can't get my picks back, Who do I have like less confidence in their ability to dig out?
And then who am I shorting?
Yeah, who am I shorting? And you're as the third or fourth team that might enter this, and there's going to probably need to be a third or fourth team to enter this because of our third little number, which is one, which is how many tradable first round picks the Knicks have right now. And a number of people have done this analysis. I saw a longtime Knicks writer, Tommy Beer, ran through it. Right now, as it currently stands, the only pick the Knicks can trade is a top eight protected 2026 first rounder from the Washington Wizards.
Which is zilch. That is not... valuable.
Yeah, it's a fake pick because the Wizards are going to be ass again. And so it's going to fall in the top eight. And then if it doesn't convey this year, it becomes 2 second round picks. So it's not even a real first. And again, if you're John Horst, you know that. You're not saying, well, that's what I'm doing. And the reason they don't have the draft capital is because of the Mikal Bridges trade when they sent out a handful of picks and swaps to the Nets. So the Knicks right now have, they can offer swap rights on 2026, 2030, and 2032. They got like a half dozen or so second rounders, but they don't really have anything in terms of draft picks right now to trade, which I think to me, if Giannis is saying it's New York or nowhere else, and the Bucks are saying, look at what they can't offer us, that's what I think the idea of doing it now becomes a little bit harder to figure out.
Yeah. And then on top of that, if you're the Knicks, you would say, hey, let's wait till this summer and then we'll get you. We'll go for Giannis because then we have another pick to offer.
Yeah, 2023 unprotected opens up at that point.
Here's the problem with that. Giannis's extension, he's eligible for an extension October 1st to sign October 1st, 2026. In order to get the full amount, he needs to be with the team with at least 6 months.
Right. So he'd need to be there
Knicks,
this season.
They
yeah.
can't really wait. In the same way that they were worried about Carmelo Anthony not being able to sign because they needed to get him in order to get his super bird rights or whatever you want to call it and get his extension number as high as possible because Carmelo wants that number to be as high as possible. And if you're a Giannis, you're like, yeah, I want to get that monster extension, but you can't do it this summer and still get that benefit. So it's this, you know, cat and mouse game. I wonder if like... I just don't think the Knicks have enough to get the deal done. And maybe this is a way to stoke the marketplace and just to generate conversation is if you think that Giannis wants to be in New York, maybe that creates leverage with other teams. And that is what John Horst wants is like other teams to be like, oh, we can't let him go to New York. Can't let that happen. All right, fine. I'll throw in two extra first round picks right. to make it happen. So I think that's what really is going on here. But I do think that the Golden State Warriors are really interesting because they do have that $54 million contract in Jimmy Butler. And we did see Phoenix wanting Jimmy Butler and couldn't get it done. You know, do you see yourself in a three-team trade where Jimmy goes to Phoenix, Phoenix sends stuff to Milwaukee, and then Milwaukee sends Giannis to the Warriors. Warriors send first-round picks over to the Milwaukee Bucks. Like that... I don't know. That's interesting because we all like, I think Octagon, I think Steph Curry is represented by Octagon, which is the same representation stateside. Keep your third eye open for Giannis. every All-Star game, Giannis and Steph are just having an absolute blast. You could
total
always
pals,
tell they just
yeah.
light up around each other. So I'm wondering if like, you know, do they just say, look, if we have an opportunity to get Giannis, yeah, Jimmy Butler, we have like a 31-3 record with you, Draymond, and Steph, but that would be 34-0 if we had Giannis instead of you. So I don't know. There's three team ways that the Knicks can get involved, but do they have enough to make a superstar trade? I don't think they do.
Yeah, I mean, your teams with the most tradable first round picks. You're looking at Oklahoma City, which you know they just won the title, so I don't know that they're going to be rushing to do that. The Nets, doesn't seem likely. The Jazz, again, Houston has nine. That's something to keep an eye on, and they've also got Şengün, they've got Amen Thompson, they've got Reed Shepard, they've got Jabari Smith Jr. That's one I might keep an eye on if we're talking about in season. But the Knicks, to your point, maybe not enough, which brings us to our fourth and final little number. I'll cop to something here. I'm reheating leftovers right now with this fourth little number. Three or four, That's how many first-round picks the Grizzlies reportedly offered in trades for OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges before the 2023 trade deadline. I used this little number when we were talking about Jimmy Butler trades last year because I was like, maybe Memphis is a Jimmy Butler team. Memphis wound up not being a Jimmy Butler team. But the fact of there was a point where the Grizzlies were this hot on OG Anunoby or Mikal Bridges, this kind of wing, that they were willing to go multiple picks to make that happen. Whether Memphis is still in that, I mean, obviously a lot's changed in Memphis since then, so who knows if they would be. But that idea of there's maybe for these 3-and-D plus wings, like all defense caliber wings who could do something with the ball in their hands, can score 20 points, there it would make sense that there's a market there. So if you're the Knicks, is that your pathway you start thinking about here? I have this opportunity for Giannis, but I got to get picks. I'm strapped for picks. Well, there was a time where those guys were both potentially valued at multiple picks on the market. Is there a way for you to then include them in the 3 or 4 team deal, turn them into picks that then turn into Giannis? And then I think your question is, what's left over if you're the Knicks, if you've traded multiple starters? You mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns as a matching salary, and now you're talking about OG or Bridges going out in the deal to get picks. What's left over afterwards? What does your team look like? I think all that increasingly complicates the idea of doing this in season. But what do you think? What do you think that kind of middle pathway might be? That guy becomes picks, and then that turns into the package we send.
I think your take as a leftover that you reheated is like a stew that gets better the second day in the fridge, you know, like a soup, like an Italian wedding or like a chili that That's just great. Gets better the second day. It's not, what's the worst reheatable leftover? It's French fries, right?
That's the fish. No, dude, fish. And if you're out here bringing back like a 2 day old salmon, no thanks.
Oh yeah. But I don't even heat it up at that point. I just do a cold salmon.
Oh yeah. Oh, the classic dad over the sink shame eat. Yeah, that's for sure. That's how it gets down over the Divine household.
Yeah, but French fries, I'm out. Any sort of, you can't reheat French fries. I guess you could throw it in the air fryer, but that's a level of low that I would never associate with your take that maybe Memphis in a 3-team trade gets involved here to get either Mikal Bridges.
Or maybe not Memphis, but like the Memphis of today, whoever that would be that's saying like, we are that connective big wing away from where we want to go, and we're willing to pony up 2 or 3 or whatever picks to get there. I guess the fact that OG and Bridges are now cycled onto new contracts complicates that somewhat too. Like they're making more now than they were when they were available at those deadlines. But that, I think that if you're the Knicks and you're saying, how do we get to a package today? That's the avenue you got to be thinking about. I got to turn one of the guys we targeted to build this finals team into picks to then go even bigger game hunting.
You are a pro's pro because you dropped this little Memphis take right before we're going to talk about Memphis.
Ooh, so, how do you like that?
Quite a segue by you. Nice job kind of bringing that bridge. Speaking of Mikal Bridges, bringing that bridge to the next segment here. We're going to talk about Ja Morant suffered an ankle injury and he's going to be out week to week.
Oof.
Which for us who are analyzing the NBA, that is a weak diagnosis because we just feel like that could be a lot, you know? It could be like 4 weeks, could be a month, could be two months. We don't know, but we're going to have to break it down anyway because lots going on in Memphis right now in ways that they did not want to be in the headlines. Nope. Coming up right after the break, we're going to talk about Ja Morant and what's going on in Memphis. I think Adam Silver would really like the games to start because Steve Ballmer and the aspiration news, all that kind of let's keep it moving. Let's bury this and keep it moving. Let's get the games going. But on the other side of that coin is like, but that means players will like step on each other and turn an ankle. And then we're going to have Fred VanVleet news. We've gotten a couple of the De'Aaron Fox and his hamstring issues. We've gotten a couple injuries in the training camp and kind of summer workouts that are surprises. And then get the Ja Morant news that he suffered an ankle injury at practice and is out week to week. Dan, can you just run through? This is another injury that the Memphis Grizzlies, who have been notoriously injury riddled over the last few years, it's not just Ja Morant now, there's multiple guys here in Memphis that you're like, wait, how did we get here on opening night? We might not even have a starting lineup.
Yeah, the Grizzlies, it's like they've built the FedEx Forum on like some kind of like the Hellmouth or something. Like it's they took over. It's just not, it's not good. It's not, and it's, and it hasn't been good for quite some time, it feels like. But the Grizzlies, yes, as you mentioned, Ja Morant out out with a left ankle sprain suffered in practice, considered week to week. He joins on the lengthy Memphis Grizzlies injury report Jaren Jackson Jr., who is still rehabbing after undergoing off-season surgery to repair a turf toe injury that I guess happened before he signed his five-year, $240 million extension, but they announced it afterward. Just as a, you know, like, yeah, let's get the good news out of the way first. And then there is some bad news. Continuing the bad news, starting center Zach Edey, their lottery pick from last year, still working his way back from off-season surgery on his left ankle. And that sounds like that's going to push forward even further. Like their reevaluation period on him is further out than Jaren Jackson Jr.
We love to hear foot problems with guys that big. Love to hear that.
Oh, yeah, man. It's really just absolutely brutal. Joining them in the center rotation of guys that are not going to be playing is Brandon Clark, who has been came back last year from an Achilles rupture, but now is needed an arthroscopic procedure this offseason to address synovitis in his right knee. He is not expected to be reevaluated until late October or early November. So they're, you know, sixth man, third big, whatever. He's also out. So you're looking at a starting five or starting 4-5 combo that could be like Jock Landale and Santi Aldama for opening night for the Grizz, which is not, I think, the way anyone drew it up there. Desmond Bane's also on the Orlando Magic now.
Oh, so, yeah. Just, yeah. Side
and like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is there, which is good. And, you know, Cedric Coward, the draft pick that they turned some of those the draft picks they got from Orlando into, he'll be there. But the Grizzlies were a 48-win playoff team last season. It feels like they weren't because of how crazy everything got at the end of last season and the disappointment of their sweep in the first round against OKC. But that was like a near 50-win team, and 80% of that starting lineup is gone or could be gone for opening night, plus maybe their best reserve. So kind of a tough spot to be in injury-wise for the Grizzlies. But as you mentioned, nothing new for the Grizzlies, especially in the Ja Morant era.
This was a team that was, for a lot of the season last year, was the number two seed in the Western Conference.
Feels like an awfully long time ago.
Yeah. And then they fired their head coach and they got a bunch of injuries. And now you're looking at Ty Jerome, KCP, Jalen Wells, who also got hurt last year. Santi Aldama and Jock Landale being their opening night starters. And hopefully all those guys get back. Ja Morant, it really is like a 1 week thing. And Jaren Jackson Jr. comes back. But this does feel like getting off on the wrong foot, no pun intended, already for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think it needs to be said, emotionally and culturally as an organization, Dan, how hard is it to build around Ja Morant over his last, what, six seasons in the league?
It's been rocky.
Through injuries and through disciplinary reasons, he's been literally on the bench more than he's been on the floor. And that's a stat. That Ja Morant has played in just 43% of the minutes for Memphis, man, since he was drafted.
Oof.
Played in like 2/3 of their games because of the suspension, obviously, was a big reason for that. But then he also had a season-ending injury that limited that year a couple years ago to 9 games played. But this is kind of what you worry about when you have these kind of jetpack point guards like Derrick Rose, like Russell Westbrook. The thing with him was like he was this kind of like Teflon body. Like no one expected him to have as long and as amazing of a career as he had, just because, hey, when the wheels start to get a little bit rickety, how is he going to be still effective? He's going to get some injuries because of just that burst and the jumping, the sheer carnage on those tendons and everything. How is he going to be able to be still a good player deep into his 30s? Ja Morant kind of feels like he's already at that point because it feels like his injury rate is way higher than someone of his age. If I'm the Memphis Grizzlies, you're kind of stuck because every time you get Ja Morant healthy, something like this pops up. And then it's like, we can't trade that guy. Can't trade him for 30 cents on the dollar. So we just got to keep running it back with Ja Morant. And thank goodness they got Ty Jerome, because that dude, he can ball. Like, I love Ty Jerome's game, and he's going to step in right away in this absence here. And that starting five, Ty Jerome, KCP, Jalen Wells, Santi Aldama, Jock Landale, that started the other night. And I feel like that's where we're headed for opening night here.
Which is tough. I mean, the thing that's it's sort of hilarious or darkly comic maybe is the right way to frame it. Like, the Grizzlies are usually pretty well set up to handle a Morant injury, because like for years it was Tyus Jones, right? As like, you know, best backup point guard in the game. Now they've got Ty Jerome, who they added in this offseason from Cleveland. And they've also got Scottie Pippen Jr., who was like a revelation for them last season.
Oh, yes.
21 starts last season, averaged 14.2 points, 5.7 assists, 4.5 rebounds, and 1.7 steals per game. 53% from the floor, 46% from three. The Grizzlies went 12-9 in those 21 starts. And then, like, he was really one of the only bright spots in that first-round sweep by Oklahoma City. Like, when Ja went down, he had that nasty, like, he got undercut by Lu Dort in the just before halftime in game three. Scottie Pippen Jr. winds up like taking the baton and running with it. 28-5-5 in game three, scores 30 in the almost, you know, trying to fend off elimination in game four. So they often have guards who can step into the breach. The commonality though is Ja Morant isn't there. And that's not, you've built the organization around it. You know, plenty of people, I know Tim Bontemps over at the Hoop Collective has talked about this a bunch, that idea of when you look for what you would do with the trade packages for point guards, it's really difficult to find who needs a point guard at this point. There's just a lot of point guard talent around the league. And so we've had conversations before about, you know, what's the market for Trae Young? What's the market for LaMelo Ball, who, like Ja Morant, is like the injury issue is really at paramount front of mind. What's the market for Ja Morant? Like, and are those guys like musical chairs at some point that is going to go on to ball kind of switching spaces? So yeah, it puts Memphis in a real bind where it's difficult to bet to bank on him. And I think that was part of the impetus last season for like, we need to reorient our half court offense. We're going to move, you know, bring in these new coaches. We're going to move away from high pick and roll, which is like the Ja Morant bread and butter. Fewer ball screens, more motion, everybody spread out, driving lanes for everybody. And like Jaren Jackson Jr. almost made all NBA. Desmond Bane looked awesome. Santi Aldama had a breakthrough season. All these guys were doing really well, but it seemed like Ja didn't like it. And then when things didn't go well, they fire the guys that did all the spaced it out stuff and they elevate to Tuomas Isolo, who's like, yeah, high pick and roll, high pick and roll, high pick and roll. And now Ja Morant's going to go. Like, it feels like they're playing whack-a-mole, but maybe the underlying commonality here is just like, everything has to be so perfect to build the right infrastructure around this player who's available this infrequently. And the Grizzlies just haven't been able to do it. It feels a little bit like we saw what the best iteration of that build looked like a few years ago, and it was good, and it got to the second round, but copped out there.
Man, what do they do? You know, like you said, like, is it just we do this musical chairs act with these point guards and have this rotation of, hey, Trae Young in Memphis or Malik Monk in Memphis, where the Sacramento Kings are like trying to figure out a way to get their point guard now that De'Aaron Fox is in San Antonio.
The Kings needing a point guard at this point is just every once in a while I'm reminded of it. And also, sorry, that's Dennis Schroeder eraser. I apologize, Dennis Schroeder. I am familiar with your game. I'm familiar with your EuroLeague game, EuroBasket game rather, all these. But man, the Kings going from Fox and Halliburton to Fox to we need a point guard in like 3 years is just really unbelievable.
I'm convinced that Dennis Schroeder is going right after my guy Ish Smith's record for most jerseys worn in the NBA. It's like he hasn't been in Memphis. So you know what? Let's make this happen.
I love that.
Right?
I love Dennis that for Schroeder? Them.
Come on down to Memphis and be the starting point guard for another team for 3 months. This has been wonderful. It's great to be back in the saddle here, ready for the season. Memphis Grizzlies, the regular season over-under right now, I just checked, is 40.5. Life comes at you fast in the Western Conference. Like even the Blazers, they're projected to have fewer wins than last year just because the West is that good. Like, yeah. I feel like the Blazers are better than they were last year, right? But like Memphis is having the same problem as like in the Western Conference, being like the same is actually a big step backward in the Western Conference because they're so good. So that's part of the problem here with the Ja Morant injury is just like, man, it is a bloodbath in the West.
And as it stands right now, just to put a pin on it, the BetMGM has the over-under on the Grizzlies win total this season as 40.5, ninth in the West. So, you know, it's not the most brutal start to the season. Their first 10 games, there's a lot of teams that where it seems like it could be pretty manageable. But if you're without your best your offensive engine and your entire front court rotation, maybe even manageable games seem less so. And then, yeah, if he misses a couple of weeks, Jaren Jackson Jr. misses a couple of weeks, all of a sudden you wake up and you're like 2-8. You could be behind the eight ball super fast in the Western Conference. So it's not the start that anybody in Memphis wanted. Hopefully week to week is on the, I don't know, closer to singular week than multiple weeks. And we get to see something like the full strength of Ja Morant, because that dude's an awful lot of fun to watch when he's out there. We just like to see him out there more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. Got Blazers game tonight. The season is beginning here for me as well. It's going to be great. I'm excited for this season. We can actually talk about some hoop.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Some, you know, tree planting companies. Dan, appreciate you.
Did Kawhi plant that tree behind you?
Oh, you know what? He said that he's done a lot of things, that I have a big bill that I need to pay. Yeah. So this I think is from Home Goods, maybe? Not sure.
I don't think they were the sponsor. I don't think that's going to help them. I think if Wachtell Lipton comes and checks the tags on that, it's not going to help them out.
Yeah. All right. Well, in any event, we're going to get some games to talk about, and we'll see you next week here on The Big Number. Reminder, yahoosports.tv, and go check out our fast channel, Yahoo Sports Network. Thank you to Emmy. Appreciate you for sticking around with us and building this this awesome show here that you can catch on YouTube, on our fast channel, as well as wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you to everyone at Yahoo Sports, and we will see you five stars. We will see you next week right here in this space at The Big Number. Thanks so much, Dan. All right. Dan, I can't tell you how awesome it is to see the Carolina Panthers play football here, and just turning on the TV on a Sunday afternoon, have Eric Collins calling a Panthers game. He was so electric for Panthers Dolphins. Okay. It was the Super Bowl for Eric Collins. It was wild.
Awesome. You know, like I listened to the Shutdown Full Cast, the college football show that, you know, all the SB Nation people do. And they would talk at times about, like, you know, there are these college football players that are just sort of like too beautiful to hold to our, like, we have to let them go. And they go and they go to the big leagues, and they go and they move on to, everybody knows about them. And they were ours once, but we can't be too stingy. Can't keep them to ourselves. That's Eric Collins right now. The world is getting a glimpse of what makes him so special. And, you know, we'll always have those first, you know, alley-oops, but he belongs to the world now.
So good. He was, Rico Dowdle went for like 8 yards. He's like, Rico, how good is he, everybody? And it's like, so great. All right. Really great. Now that I've lost my voice screaming like Eric Collins, I got to do this teaser.
Knock that tease out.